to live righteously. Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's time for a special episode of The Cultural Hall. Coming up in just a second, we're going to talk with Nancy Phippen Brown, author of the book Help Thou Mine Unbelief, a great book and a great story, so we'll visit with her in just a second. I want to talk to you about a few things going on here at The Cultural Hall. First of all, you can always get in touch with us, Richie, at theculturalhall.com, or go to the contact page at theculturalhall.com. Find us on the regular social media networks like the Pinterest. That's huge. You can find us on Google Plus. That's not as huge. We all know that. You can find us on Facebook and like us. You can follow us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. But also, new thing, we've talked about it only a little here in The Cultural Hall, but the Mormon News Report. You see it on our Facebook page. We post it there. We share it on our Twitter page. But it is a daily news report where it's all the stories about the LDS Church that our little gathering thing will gather up for us. And then we share them for you. If you're interested in doing that, you can go to Mormon News Report on Facebook, or you can just go to theculturalhall.com and you'll see those posts there, and you can find out how to subscribe to the email that comes to your inbox by 8 a.m. Mountain Standard Time every day. Or you can just get the best of the best on our Twitter feed or Facebook thing, that kind of stuff. So do that. That's the Mormon News Report. The next thing is, don't forget, on Monday, July 14th, it's Sammy's Home Evening down in Provo, Utah. We're going to have special guests Mindy Gledhill and also Ryan Shoup of Ryan Shoup and the Rubber Band. They'll be down there. Maybe we can get them to play some music for us. We'll have other delicious goodies and other things for that evening to continue to be announced. But make plans now for the 14th of July. It's The Cultural Hall presents Sammy's Home Evening. And again, keep tight to theculturalhall.com and all of our outlets to find out where exactly that is. As always, leave us a review at Stitcher if you listen through that. Leave us a review on iTunes if you do that. You can subscribe and get those there as soon as they drop so that you have them. So that took care of that thing. What's my last thing that I need you to do? Oh, yeah, I'm curious. We've talked about, because we're doing this Mormon News Report, and we have the weekly episode, the Articles of News episodes. We're talking about perhaps doing more than once a week episodes of Articles of News, making it a little bit more current and a little more relevant when we do it, but also making those episodes a little bit less. So it'd be still the same format, a couple of panelists and talking about news, but we're thinking about maybe doing like news on Monday and Friday. What do you think about that? Or if you have other suggestions, things that we should do in the Cultural Hall, maybe stuff that has nothing to do with the Articles of News, but something else, a guest suggestion, something with the website, something that we should do on social media or otherwise, you can always hit me up, richie@theculturalhall.com. Sound good? All right, I hope so. Coming up in just a second, I've got Nancy Phippen Brown, author of Help Thou Mine Unbelief. You're listening to The Cultural Hall.
Consumer alert! This is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops, and I have a very important consumer alert for you. There is an extremely dangerous virus called the FBI virus that's infecting thousands of computers. It takes control of your webcam and takes pictures of you without your permission. Then it locks your computer and tells you that you've committed a horrible crime and that the FBI has criminal evidence against you. It then gives you instructions on how to pay a huge fine or face jail time. It's one of the scariest viruses I've seen in 20 years of fixing computers. There's good news, though. At PC Laptops, we can help protect you. If you think you've been infected, please bring in your computer, no matter what brand it is, into any PC Laptops location right now. We'll scan it for free. No obligation. The scan is free. So get into any one of our locations right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. At PC Laptops, we got your back, and we love you.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
Looking for a change in your workout? Are you looking for real results? Pure Bar is the fastest, most effective, yet safest way to transform your body. In just 55 minutes, you will achieve a full body workout on the areas women struggle with the most: hips, seat, abs, and arms. The Pure Bar technique is low impact, protecting your joints by avoiding any bouncing or jumping. The technique works to defy gravity by tapering everything in and lifting it up. Come check out Pure Bar today in Draper at 123rd South and 200 East, just 3 blocks east of the freeway. Your first class is free and there's no obligation. Mention that you heard this ad on Cultural Hall and take 10% off any class package. Give us a call at 801-523-6215 or visit us online at www.purebar.com. That's PUREBARRE.com and select the Draper, Utah location. Pure Bar. Lift. Tone. Burn.
Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's time to visit with Nancy Phippen Brown, author of the book, Help Thou Mine Unbelief. A couple things. We were speaking off the air about Phippen. That is your maiden name.
Right.
And the book, kind of a tribute to your parents. So,
yeah, I wrote it when my father passed away, and it really kind of rocked my mother's world, and she started to question her faith a little bit and wondered if she was ever going to see him again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I kept trying to help her, but I found out I didn't have all the answers, nor do I still. But, yeah. But
I was going to say, man, yeah. This has all the answers. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, all the answers. Be sure and get it. Everybody get it. No, but it made me pursue questions that I had always had, and in trying to help give her some answers about whether there really was a God and a life after death.
How long ago were we talking on that?
My father passed away about 18 months ago.
Oh, so and pretty recent then.
Yeah, I it took me a year to write the book, just kind of doing a lot of research and spending long nights and early morning hours doing that.
Let me ask you a little bit about get to know you. You had mentioned earlier you are from California, mm-hmm. at least born. So then talk after birth, where are we going? What where were you raised? Where?
Well, I was raised pretty much in both Southern and Northern California, but then about halfway through my junior year, my parents moved to Utah,
okay.
to Brigham City, and I stayed in California and graduated, and then
you said, "Forget it, parents, I'm staying here."
Well, I went there for a little while, but kind of was going through a little rebellion yeah. period, and decided that wasn't for me. Little tiny Brigham City, which right now I think is wonderful, but mm-hmm. at the time, you know,
was not the thing you
yeah.
wanted.
Yeah. So after that, just kind of went out on my own and went to various places.
Let me ask you this: have you always been a writer, or is that something that you just decided with the passing of your father? Yeah, I'm going to pursue this thing I've always wanted to do.
No, actually, I have a degree in journalism okay. and have worked for newspapers and magazines for most of my life, off and on, while raising my children. And part of that time, I worked for the church news. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, enjoyed that quite a bit, kind of getting to know the leaders, you know, in a different light.
Yeah. How often, working for the LDS Church News, do you get an opportunity to actually meet, like, an apostle or one of the 70 or stuff like that?
Quite often, actually. I remember attending President Hinckley's birthday party mm-hmm. that they had for him. And yeah, you kind of rub shoulders. You know, you're covering events. You cover all of the conference sessions, and they have a special place for the press. And so you do that, and there's various interviews for things that are going on.
Hmm.
So it
What's
was
the coolest thing that you ever did with working for the LDS Church News?
I don't know. I think just generally meeting them and covering things that was going on. Just having access. I can't think of, I guess the birthday party, I mentioned that, so mm-hmm. that was probably kind of a fun
Now, is that the big, because there were a couple of birthday parties for President Hinckley. There was one in particular that was a huge celebration with like the choir singing and special guests and all that. Is that the birthday party that you were referencing?
I don't think that was the one. We're talking a lot of years ago. I'm kind of an old woman. So.
30. 31?
Yeah, 32. Right.
Tell me when I get closer. 33.
About twice that.
I wouldn't have said that. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah.
If that makes you feel any better.
Well, it does, but yeah, the truth is the truth.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a long time ago. And yeah.
So you have, you mentioned kind of in passing though that you have kids. What about family? So you're married.
I'm married. Yes.
Couple kids?
Have three children of my own. This is my second husband. We've been married for 12 years.
And 2.0 going better than 1.0?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, actually the first one was pretty good too. It was just one of those things. And But yeah, we have seven children between us and 20 grandchildren.
Jeez.
And so they keep us busy and active.
And you're retired now?
Retired just about 2 years ago. We were living in Idaho Falls, Idaho at the time. And I was working as a, I was the director of volunteer services for the hospital there in Idaho Falls. Before that, I was doing community relations and marketing and so forth for the hospital, and then ended up doing that before I retired. And when we retired, my husband promised me we could go somewhere warm. So we moved to St. George, which is where we're living now.
Oh, that's great. And how are you liking St. George so far?
I love it. I love it. It's a little, you know, our families are more north, so that part is not fun, but we love the weather.
So you want to have a little bit of a, well, grandma can watch the kids. No, they can't. Not unless you get them down here to us.
Yeah, that almost sounds good to me, you know, because you kind of miss your grandkids when you're not close to them all the time. But, but we get out here a fair amount and they come see us. So it's working out.
And St. George, too. The thing I really like about the St. George community, and that's St. George, Utah, for people who may not know, southern part of the state, is the whole city, it seems like, is really geared, or not geared, but sort of revolves around the temple, similar to how it is with Salt Lake. You know, the center of town is Temple Square.
I think that's true, yeah.
I don't know that it's exact center of St. George, but you can see the temple from anywhere in St. George, and I kind of like that.
Yeah, they certainly built it that way. In fact, I think the church generally does that, builds its temples where they can be seen readily from distances, and St. George is certainly that way.
With St. George, kind of a, sorry, and I didn't think I was going to delve into this actually, but do you like it as a kind of a community where people go to retire?
Yeah.
Because I know it kind of gets that little bit of a name. It's still in Utah. So, you know, since this is the pilgrimage land for every Mormon person, they have to come to Utah at one point in their life, to have that kind of large community of, how do we say it delicately, elderish people?
Well, you know, I mean, part of me doesn't want to consider myself elderly.
Although, and I wouldn't.
No, and I don't mean it that way. But yes, I see what you're saying. And the idea of going to a retirement community, you know, does, it kind of puts that onus on you a little bit. But I just love it. And frankly, you know, I've learned to play pickleball.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a total retirement.
I know shuffleboard.
Well, a shuffleboard, I don't know yet, but pickleball is kind of an up-and-coming new sport, which kind of started in retirement communities because it's done on a kind of a tennis court, but only smaller.
Okay.
And so you're not quite, it's not, requires that much out of you.
Is it rackets and
it's
things
small,
like?
It's not a racket, but it's not a ping pong paddle either. It's kind of a cross between the two, but
okay,
you play over a net. Anyway, but it's starting to move beyond the retirement communities, and I happen to play golf, so my husband and I are enjoying that.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't beat that huge golfing community down in St. George.
Yeah.
And the weather, like you say, nice and warm.
Yeah, love it, love it.
12 years, version 2.0, 7 kids, 20 grandkids. Any greats yet? Do you have any great grandkids?
Not yet.
Good.
The oldest is 16, so
good.
We're
so good.
A little bit off, but not far.
Let's wait. Let's wait on all that.
We'll worry about missions right now for them.
So the book, coming back to that, and that's why you're here, the book is called Help Thou Mine Unbelief, and then kind of as a byline, it's Scientific, Historical, and Spiritual Evidence of God. So to go back, you said kind of the setting for this is that at the passing of your father, your mom started having a pretty difficult time. I think that's commonplace. Seeing my grandmother in the way that she reacted when her husband, my grandfather of man, I want to say when he finally passed, they'd probably been married 65 years. It was, you know, at first she was great because she was busy. It was planning the funeral and, you know, all those things. And then real quickly, it became apparent to her that she didn't know how to function without another person, and then began questioning everything. You know, I don't want to be here anymore. Why am I still around? Am I going to see him again? I just miss him so much. Where is he? You know, all these things. Similar kind of situation?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is not uncommon. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people, you know, that lose a loved one like that, you know, go through that. But for me, the interesting thing was, as I would sit and visit with her and try to assuage her concerns and fears, I found myself, some of the questions that I've always had my whole life were bubbling up. And I wanted answers, too. You know, I've been, other than that little time when I was younger, you know, I've been an active member of the church, served a mission, raised my kids in the church, you know, temple marriage, two temple marriages.
There you go. Where did you serve your mission, Carrie?
I went to Colorado.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so, you know, all of that, you know, and have been active, holding callings. But underneath it all, I've had questions. I've had, not that I questioned the church per se, but I questioned how there could be a God, you know, really is there a God out there? And it does, you know, it seemed like it was way out there. I couldn't grasp it. It didn't jive with what I understood about science. And I found out, so I decided to embark on this effort, not only to answer my mother's questions, but to answer my own.
Did everyone think you were kind of crazy?
I don't think anybody knew much about it besides my husband.
Did he think you're crazy?
No, he was very supportive, but he felt bad that I was, I mean, I would work till 3 o'clock in the morning, get up at 5 o'clock. I mean, I was obsessed with this, and I spent so much time at the library and bookstores and on the internet doing research, but I'm a journalist. That's what I've done most of my life, and I like to dig. I like to research, and so I kind of used that penchant that I have for that anyway, to find these answers. And so the result, I didn't even know I was really going to write a book, but in the end, that's kind of...
So the intention wasn't originally to write a book. It was just to find answers to the questions.
Yeah. And then as I dug and got more and more, and all the questions that I had, that's what's in this book. My own questions, things like the origin of man, the Big Bang Theory, evolution. How does that jive with church doctrine? And things like near-death experiences. There are so many people that have those all over the world that has to be some evidence, right, that there's an existence of God. How does God communicate to us? What is it all about? Visions, dreams, miracles. You know, those are all evidence of God. So I tried to pull in people's personal stories and that kind of added to the narration. I had other questions about history. Why are there so many religions in the world, and where do they all come from? And how can there be a God if, you know, everybody's got a different take on him and various tenets of religion and theology? You know, how does that figure? You know, and it bothered me. And what about stories in the Bible? How can things like the flood of Noah be?
Yeah, how could that really
actual,
happen?
Yeah. And the confusion of the languages and just so many other things, you know. And so I went after these things. Temple symbolism, you know, didn't go into anything that I shouldn't have. But just, you know, where did that all come from, and why do we have so much symbolism, and what does it mean? And I just was fascinated by what I was finding out. And what I did is I coupled science, history, and spiritual experiences, spiritual phenomenon, together to show evidence that there really is a God and of the restored gospel of Christ. So it's a combination of going to scholars and scientists and also to church leaders and finding out what the prophets and apostles have said on every one of these topics and putting them all together so that it makes sense. And the whole purpose behind this is I'm not trying to say that you need physical evidence to have a testimony, because ultimately your testimony has to come from the Spirit. It has to come from a witness from the Holy Ghost. But what this does is for those people who maybe, like myself, who just needed a little more meat on the bone. Mm-hmm. You know, my testimony was lacking just through prayer and church attendance and stuff. Sure. It was missing something. This puts a little meat on the bone. This gives you some tangible evidence to go along with the spiritual experiences that you're trying to have through the Spirit, to just solidify and make sense of it all. And I have to tell you that my mother has read the book twice. Mm-hmm. And totally changed her feelings. She is totally on board, expecting to see my father again. And not counting down the days. She's happy to be alive. She loves her children and grandchildren. And I have to say that for myself, it was the biggest cathartic experience of my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I am so excited about it that I just want to share it with other people who may be going through some of the same things.
A couple questions that I had as you were speaking there. One isn't so much a question, but I kind of see the excited Nancy Brown as she's up in the middle of the night finding out these different things. And, you know, it's 1 or 2 in the morning and being like, I can't believe this, and yelling into your husband who's trying to sleep.
It's so true.
Hey, can you believe? It's 2 in the morning. I'll let you sleep. I'll tell you about it tomorrow. We'll talk about it later. So I just see that kind of in my head. But then the other question I had is, we mentioned that you were able to work for the LDS Church News. And you talked about, you know, different experiences and things that prophets had said and stuff like that. Are there experiences or conversations that you've had with leaders of the church that are cited in the book?
No, nothing personal from me personally. I worked for the Church News for about a year, so I wasn't there a whole long time, but have done freelance writing for them for a number of years and also a little bit in the Ensign. But wait, what was the question?
So had they cited, were any conversations with them cited?
Yeah, no, nothing personally for me, but it is filled with quotes that I have found and researched.
Cool.
For instance, let me just mention one thing. I've always believed in evolution, and this is a topic that...
Yeah, watch it here. Huh?
Yeah, and a lot of people are just so literalist in their thinking regarding... Mm-hmm. theology and the restored gospel in general, that, you know, that is totally taboo and you just don't go there, right? But I've always felt that it was the right thing, but you just don't raise your hand in Sunday school class and you try to talk about that because it's...
Yeah, or if you do, you become that lady in the ward that's like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, yeah.
She's raising her hand.
That's right.
We know where this is going.
Yeah, and nobody wants to do that. Yeah. Most people don't anyway. Yeah. But at any rate, as I was... researching this and finding out what church leaders have said over the years, I was shocked. I had no idea of what I found out, and I think a lot of people might be as well. And what I found out, trying to make this quick in this interview, is that most of us back in the 50s thought that the church was totally against evolution because of two books in particular that were written by church general authorities.
Okay.
And one being Mormon Doctrine and the other being Joseph Fielding Smith on the Origin of Man. And they were of a literalist viewpoint. They were apostles, but they were of a literalist viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And their personal opinion was that there's no such thing as evolution. There's no such thing as the Big Bang, you know, all that kind of thing. And they printed them in these books. And so most of us thought that that was what it was, that was doctrine, right? But what happened was it created such a stir that President McKay was approached about it, and he finally stated, and I've got this all in the book laid out, he finally stated, those two books are completely the opinion of the brethren who wrote them. Mm-hmm. They are not a doctrine of the church. In fact, he even said, we don't know whether evolution is correct or not. It could be. There's parts of it that sound good, but we don't know. So the point I was trying to make is there's a lot of things like that that we just as a people, as a cultural group, kind of think is doctrine, that it's a tenet of the church. And come to find out, it's not. BYU teaches it, you know, because that's what it is. That's science. That's what's out there. And And when it is not a specified doctrine of the church, we are free as members of the church to believe what we want to if it increases our faith and our spirituality and our testimonies. And that's
where sometimes we get ourselves in trouble.
Yeah, right. But and you have to be careful. I'm not saying that you just go off willy-nilly.
But you definitely hear examples of people where it's like, and it's my personal belief, and you go, okay.
Yeah, and you have to be careful, and that's what I'm saying. All I know is, for me personally, and anybody else who may have those same feelings, it was this huge eye-opener when I discovered these documents, and I had no idea. And so from there, I came to realize, all right, what is doctrine? You know, and there are certain things that obviously are, but there's an awful lot of things that aren't. And the main thing is, I am a strong member of the church, and I believe in the restored gospel, but I am not so literalist in my thinking that I think the world was created in six literal days, or that there were no people that ever existed prior to Adam and Eve. You know, I mean, science tells us a lot of things otherwise. But I think it's up to the individual. Now, there's a lot of people who will hear this and they'll go,
Wait a minute, Nancy Pippin Brown.
That's right. And I realize that. But honestly, there is nothing in this book that I can see, that I feel, goes against anything that the church has ever said. In fact, everything in there has been backed up by words from the prophets and apostles.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned that you, your previous writing experiences, things like magazines and the church
newspapers,
news and newspapers, stuff like that. Is it written as such, or is it a narrative, or how does the book kind of go?
This book?
Yeah. I know that there's like, I'm looking here and it's like section one or chapter one, I guess, is evidence of divine creation. Then it has a bunch of subheadings. So is it written sort of like, here's the big topic and now short little essays on each of these things? Or is it like, in my experience, this is how it is and let's walk through that? Or,
well, I interjected some of my own experiences throughout the book, but they're limited. Mostly it is going into the topic, and like you have the broad topic of the origin of man, but then there's going to be subtopics to go along with that. So it's totally nonfiction with a lot of research. There's a lot of footnotes in there, but also interspersed throughout it are people's examples, real life examples of people's experiences. For instance, like there's a chapter on near-death experiences.
Which I always find fascinating.
Me too. That's my favorite, actually. And other things like that, but like visitations of people who have died
in the temple, or after someone passed away,
all
those kind of things.
I mean, they're out there. You know, there's so many people who have those experiences. I, for one, have never had an experience like that, and wish I could have one.
Yeah, come on, you hear that? People around me who have passed away.
That's right. Here I am. I'm waiting. Let me see you. You know, but it hasn't happened for me, so I can't speak to personally. But I have found and researched others who have had those experiences, and so I've tried to interject those within the chapters to bring the spiritual part of this. Yeah, it's science, history, but also spiritual experiences, and those are the things that really give heart to the book.
Yeah,
and so I tried to do a balance. The style of my writing is very approachable. I am not a scientist. I am not a scholar by any means. And so I had to be able to understand what I was putting down there.
Sure.
And
I like it too that it's not, I mean, we talk about books of nonfiction, and sometimes people always kind of imagine in their mind a huge, hefty, 500-600 page book. And that's not what this is either. I'm looking at like 300 and something. I'm trying to flip here to exact 306 pages.
Well, and every chapter is on a different topic. It goes in, like I said, it goes into Bible stuff and stories about the Bible, and it goes into evil and why is there so much evil in the world, and how can there be a God? How can a lot of people refuse to be believers in God because they think there's so much evil in the world? And I get that,
Salvation of the dead in here.
Salvation
as well,
of the dead.
Flipping through just kind of some
symbolism,
of the stuff.
Things that so you could actually get the book and just read one chapter that really interests you. And you wouldn't be missing anything by not reading the whole book.
Help for the Doubting Thomas. That sounds pretty good, too.
That's the last chapter. And because there's a lot of people out there. I was a doubting Thomas. It didn't stop me from my activity because I had faith enough to think, okay, well, this makes sense to me. It feels right to me. I do have questions. Maybe I'll figure it all out once I do die in the next life. And just kind of went on from there. But man, just doing the research on this thing, I feel so much better.
That's great. And now people can take advantage of all your late nights and just read your book.
That's what I'm hoping.
The book is called Help Thou Mine Unbelief. It's self-published. Let's talk about that. A choice to self-publish?
Well,
I know it's a tricky process. We've had several authors in here who have said, boy, man, you end up just going self-published so you don't have to deal with all that stuff. But was it a choice?
Well, yeah, I think it was a choice that I didn't really have otherwise.
Okay.
And the reason is, I say that because, you know, when you're an LDS author, your opportunities for marketing are very limited, you know, and there's only so many LDS publishers that are going to take a chance on a book like this. And certainly Deseret Book, you know, they cater more to the scholars, the BYU professors, the apostles, you know, if you have a PhD at the end of your name, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you got some initials at the end.
Yeah. So I kind of knew from the get-go that it probably trying to go some regular publishing route would be very difficult. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to cut through it. I really want to get this out there. And so I did. I self-published. And it's kind of challenging, you know, because I can tell you this. I don't know that Deseret Book would ever pick it up, and I'm not expecting that. But Siegel Book has picked it up.
Oh, great.
And it's not there yet. I have printed 1,000 copies and gotten them to an LDS distributor.
That's awesome.
And the distributor is working to get them in the bookstores, and Siegel has already told me they do want it. And so we're just kind of waiting for that to happen. It should be any day now. It should be in the Siegel bookstore. So I feel good about that.
Yeah, congratulations. That's really great. Let me ask you the picture. What is that a picture of that's on the cover?
Well, that's a good question. The people that created this for me, I gave them some ideas, and I said, I'm looking for something that shows God, a feeling of God, and these are like rays, sun rays coming down into the trees.
Light, enlightenment kind of thing.
Coming down to the earth, because it's a juxtaposition of God with the earth that he created. You know, that's the whole idea behind it. So it's a very striking kind of picture.
It's gorgeous. I wondered if it was maybe like the Sacred Grove or something like that as I was looking at it.
No, but my website's got a picture of the Sacred Grove.
And the website is?
www.nancyphippenbrown.com. And Brown has an E at the end. So.
And Phippen is P-H-I-P-P-E-N, not Phippen like flipping without the L.
Which
like
I used to get that all the time when I was a kid. You know, it's one of those names. But yeah, nancyphippenbrown.com. And you can order it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble right now. Or like I said, any day now, I'm hoping it's going to show up in the Siegel bookstores. So.
That's great. That's a good-looking book. I'm excited for you and excited for the success for you. Let me ask you, we ask everyone who steps in the Cultural Hall 3 questions. First question that we ask people is, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
Yes, I have a calling. I am. I have to laugh a little bit, but it is the cannery specialist in the ward. It's just that I don't really do any of that too much, but I need to be better. So that's my calling.
Well, then consider this your calling to repentance and be better at your canning responsibility.
Yes, sir. All right.
I actually love the cannery, though.
Oh, it's great.
There's one here in Murray, and I love it. I love going there and, you know, working alongside people that I would never talk to otherwise, because it's just, you know, everyone kind of comes in a calling and serves. So I like that.
And it is. It's wonderful. We have one in St. George, and I try to arrange cannery dates where the ward can go as a whole and and help each other can and stuff. And I just say I'm not real great at it because, you know, we bought our stuff years ago.
Yes. And it's still sitting there.
But anyway, yes, I do need to repent.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make up one for yourself, what would you pick?
That one's easy.
Okay.
I would love to be and have been at various times a Relief Society teacher. I love that.
You love doing that?
It gives me an opportunity to research more and to really pull some things together and get the women talking and sharing about things that are of important. I mean, everything's important, you know, in these lessons, but I always like to kind of you know, beef them up a little bit. Maybe you're not supposed to do that, but...
Oh, I think you are.
I like that calling.
If you feel prompted by the Spirit, I think you are to do it for sure. And then the final question we ask everyone is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith. Okay. That is an interesting question, and I'm not sure this completely answers it, but I will tell you that I gain strength and testimony in faith when I'm in the company of other like-minded people. And it's like the scripture where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I also. Mm-hmm. I gain the most strength when I'm with friends and we talk about the gospel and we share opinions and feelings and experiences. And I love that about the gospel, because it's a faith where you don't just necessarily have to sit and take what's spoon-fed to you. Mm-hmm. You can take it and mull it over in your own mind and build upon it and share it with others. And that's the other thing. I love missionary work. And so I like sharing my faith with others. And so if I do that with friends, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But I also like to share it with other people that may not be members or who are inactive.
Cool. It's Nancy Phippen Brown, author of Help Thou Mine Unbelief, Scientific, Historical, and Spiritual Evidence of God. Thank you for coming and telling us about the book. You can find it Amazon.com. Pre-order it there.
Mm-hmm.
And
BarnesandNoble.com.
And soon in Siegel Book and BarnesandNoble.com. Anywhere else?
He's trying to get it into all the mom and pop shops, LDS shops, BYU books, that sort of thing. So cool. I'm kind of waiting to find out, because this is a new
venture. Fingers crossed. And if you pay 11% next month, it'll happen, right?
Isn't that what they say? There you go.
You pay a little extra and think, I'm just kidding.
There you go.
Well, we hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.